always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show. Happy Friday, all y'all. Thanks for joining us once again at 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL. We'll be unpacking Joe Biden's disastrous debate night, whatever it was that we witnessed last night, and more today. Of course, we'll have a ton of great guests, including Shane Scholer, Green County Clerk running for Secretary of State, Chris's Corner, the Speaker's Stump Speech, Patrick Toohey of the Show Me Institute talking about this latest border war between Missouri and Kansas regarding the Chiefs and the Royals. Chris Arps, we're all back here in one piece today. What a night. We all had it. Johnny's Hideout last night. I bet we want to thank everyone who showed up.
We had a fantastic crowd. We were packed to the rafters with good folks watching to debate. Fans of News Talk STL and all of our shows, we appreciate you listening. We appreciate you coming out to our events. Twice in one week, we had a packed event. I think people at the debate yesterday were just as shocked as we were, Tim. The pundits around the country and the people around the country that witnessed Joe Biden's debate performance on the yesterday. There's no more, they can no longer say that these are cheap fakes, that these are videos that are edited. The American people saw today what conservatives have been screaming from the rooftops for the last year, that Joe Biden does not have the mental capacity to do this job. I have to give CNN a lot of credit. We expected them, you know, their nickname is the Clinton News Network. A lot of people thought that they were going to be unfair. Jake Tapper and Dana Bash, they did a good job. One of the things that I talked about yesterday was, one of the things I was going to look at was Donald Trump going to, behave and follow the debate rules. He did just that. And because he did that, I think that's why a lot of, respondents, people that were polled yesterday, said that he won that debate yesterday.
I agree. I think the rules that CNN and Biden demanded, that Biden demanded and CNN happily acquiesced to, I think they ended up backfiring because I think they ended up highlighting all of Trump's positives and also underscoring all of Joe Biden's negatives. It was there. It was a very sterile environment. There was no hiding the fact that Joe Biden is no longer fit for office. And Donald Trump was able to show on a policy level why things were much better during his term than under Joe Biden's. Stepping back and looking at this from 35,000 feet, I don't think it can be understated. This thing was an unmitigated disaster for Biden. I don't think we thought it was going to be nearly as good for Donald Trump. So on the whole, it was fantastic. Now, I think now this is just going to invigorate the far left in Washington, D.C. to double and triple down on stupid. They're going to lie, cheat, rig their way towards another election of victory if they can. Nobody needs to take their foot off the gas. Who wants to save America?
Tim, I agree to you to a certain extent, but if you look at all of the after debate news from the Democrats and from their publications, they know there's no coming back from this political, all of these Democratic publications that lean center left. They're not even trying to make excuses for Biden at all. Some of the quotes that I have here where they're talking about, one guy said he was a Democratic, sent an email to Politico and basically said, I chose a wrong time to stop sniffing glue. I mean, Democrats are panicking. They know that they've got to get him out of there, and I don't even think they're going to try to save him.
I agree with that. I just don't know how they're going to do it, because Joe Biden went out today and went back on the campaign trail, did a big rally. He sounded completely unhinged again. Mm-hmm. He made several more verbal gaffes. It's one thing for the Democratic intelligentsia to want Biden to leave. I agree. If the New York Times and the Washington Post and CNN and MSNBC could have their way, they would move Joe Biden out yesterday. But the Bidens have basically said, we're not going anywhere. So I don't know what you do with, if you're a Democrat, how physically, operationally, How do you actually get him to step out if he refuses to? Because Jill Biden's not letting him go anywhere.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that Politico was talking about, and some of the Democratic operatives were saying that who is it going to be that's going to have to go tell Joe Biden that it's over? Is it going to be Bill Clinton? Is it Hillary Clinton? Is it Al Gore? Nancy Pelosi? Jim Clyburn?
Barack Obama.
They're saying somebody has to go tell Joe Biden that this is over. And this is a former Obama White House official. They've also, in this political article, they're talking about some of these Democrats are making lists of potential people to take over for Biden. Mm-hmm. One of them is Governor Whitmer of Michigan, Andy Beshear of Kentucky, North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper, whose term limited out, Gavin Newsom, of course, from California. And one name that's not in here, of course, is our next door neighbor, Pritzker, who is a billionaire who could sell funds. So it's all hands on deck. It's SOS. They know Joe Biden has to be replaced if they want to have any chance of winning the presidency in November.
And how in the world do you then skip over the first African-American female vice president? They have a huge Kamala problem as well. I heard a great conspiracy theory. May have been on Vic's show this morning, or may have been on Mike. Someone said, you know, they'll move Joe out if they can orchestrate all this, and it's going to be very difficult for them. But one possible play is move Biden out of the way, let Kamala finish the rest of the term, so you give her the badge of being the first African American female, and then you only do that. So everybody's got to be in on this together. You only allow her then to be president for like 3 or 4 months, and then you have one of these other people run instead.
Yeah,
and that's the olive branch you give to her.
Yeah, I think they've
very complicated.
I think they've got to find something big to give to her in order for her not to want the nomination. They've got to give her something big so that she will go out publicly and give the impression that this was her idea, that no one forced her out. I don't know what that could be at this point. As we've talked about, black women are a huge constituency for the Democratic Party. They, I think, are one of their biggest voting blocks. They don't want to alienate them by getting rid of Kamala. One possible solution that I think could maybe placate them, especially if Kamala is given something and she doesn't mind being replaced, is replacing her with Maryland's new governor, Wes Moore, African-American, very articulate. He is a West Point graduate. Maybe he may be acceptable as a replacement for Kamala Harris, but that's a tricky situation that the Democrats are dealing with right now. This is like a political Jenga game for them. Whatever block they pull out could collapse the whole thing.
And look, a lot of these names that we roll off our tongues are, and I know our audience is extremely educated and they probably recognize a lot of these names too. Most of America has no clue who Wes Moore is. People barely probably know who Gavin Newsom is, and he's got serious baggage because his star is burnished now.
And that could be a good thing, Tim, if we've got 3-4 months left in the election and nobody knows who these people are.
I mean.
So that could be a positive thing
for
them.
For the Republicans, it's great.
Yeah.
For the Democrats, they're in a real, they waited, Chris, way too long. We were broadcasting to them. Nobody in DNC headquarters apparently listens to our show. We were telling them a year ago that Joe Biden, because you all have eyes and ears, and you've been watching the decline of Joe Biden now for years now. And we were suggesting they needed to do this last year, and they would have had plenty of time to introduce somebody new to the United States of America. But yeah, Chris, as of next Tuesday, we're 4 months until the general election. And Joe Biden is already the nominee. They've chosen him. And so for a party that yells and screams about protecting democracy, you're now going to somehow move out of the way your candidate. Well, democracy has never really stood in the way of Democrats in their political power plays.
Yeah, I don't. At this stage, what we all witnessed last night and the train wreck that Joe Biden was yesterday, I don't think Democrats are concerned about that. I mean, it's panic button in the DNC right now. They know that Joe Biden cannot be their candidate. And I think they're all weighing that it is better to try to put a new candidate in 2-3 months before the election. Not a lot of time to vet a candidate, like if they were around for a year, and maybe they can slip this candidate past the American people in a shortened election campaign season. I don't know, but I would put the odds at 75% 80% that Joe Biden will not be on the ballot in November.
I want him to stay there, though. I hope they just drag his carcass across the finish line. We'll see. Speaking of elections, we've got an expert on elections. He's standing by in our beautifully overly ostentatious lobby. Shane Scholer, Greene County Clerk, candidate for Secretary of State. He's going to be joining us in our next segment at 425 to discuss his campaign for Secretary of State. He's going to discuss what he's been doing as far as elections in the state of Missouri and more. Chris, we'll have Chris's Corner today at 445.
Yeah, we'll go over some of these Supreme Court decisions that were released today, and we'll talk a little bit more about the panicking that is going on within the Democratic Party. A memo was put out by Peter Pfeiffer, former White House Communication Director for the Obama administration, and it shows they are in straight panic mode.
At 5:07, you're going to hear a lot about the debate today, folks. I have a long list of people commenting on the debate last night in line with what Chris and I just talked about, and it's those on the left who are losing their minds. I'm going to read to you some of the immediate reaction from some of the most left-leaning sources in the country. It's not just, we've been saying this for over a year or more about Biden. They finally woke up and smelled the coffee last night, because finally we had a situation where Joe Biden was not in an orchestrated, organized fashion, where he just didn't have to blow through a bunch of teleprompter speeches. This was Joe Biden unplugged. And it's as if the media just finally woke up and realized how bad he is.
Yeah, and it's very funny, too, if you look at the comments when the media was starting to talk about how Joe Biden was looking tired and was sounding hoarse and not on top of his game. The Democrats immediately, the campaign immediately put something out saying that Joe Biden had a cold. That's why he was sounding hoarse and raspy. They asked Kamala Harris about his performance, and she said, "Look, I'm going to admit, basically, that he did not start off strong, but he started off, he ended better than he started." I mean, they can't even make excuses for yesterday's performance. And yesterday's debate performance made a lot of clips for the Trump campaign. A lot of clips.
When Joe Biden remember I was saying if he goes catatonic during this debate, it's probably over. That happened last night. In the first 5 minutes, he completely lost his place. He completely lost what he was talking about. He mumbled off into complete silence, and Jake Tapper basically stepped in and said, "Oh, thank you very much, Mr. President."
Yeah.
President Trump, now the next, I mean, they tried to just blow over that and try to get to the next question.
Yeah, and in his freeze up moment, he talked about rattling off the things that he, some positive things that he did. He got into that freeze moment. Then he said, "We beat Medicare." And people were like, "What? What are you talking about?" People were speculating that he talked about that they beat pharma, big pharma.
Yes.
But he said Medicare instead, which made absolutely no sense.
Mm-hmm. The only thing he didn't do was give homage to Corn Pop. That would have been that would have been the icing on the cake. And yeah, CNN, they actually had a topical debate. They actually had a wide-ranging topical debate. I thought they dwelled a little too long on abortion in January 6th, but we knew they would do that. And how about the fact that, and you're going to probably talk about this in Chris's Corner, how about the fact that on the heels of that debate performance, those in the Trump campaign couldn't be happier about the Supreme Court decision today regarding the January 6th defendants that actually affects the Trump case as well. That's all I'll say about it, because you're probably going to get a little deeper into that.
Yeah,
so.
A couple of those cases helped Donald Trump with his case, Supreme Court today. A lot of big decisions we have to talk about today, Tim.
And I'm not going to say, hey ho, the administrative state is dead, but it's been mortally wounded. A case that we've been talking about here on this program with Zach Smith and our other legal eagles came out as expected. The Chevron doctrine is dead. The administrative state has taken a huge hole in its stern side. That doesn't mean they're going to go away. The deep state will try to definitely circle the wagons, but the Loper, Bright, and Relentless cases went for the plaintiffs, and that means the administrative state in Washington, D.C. and beyond is going to be taking on water.
Yeah, and all the critics of that decision are saying that now you're going to have judges becoming experts in some of these cases instead of it being relied on by the bureaucratic state to be the experts when a law is ambiguous. They don't want judges trying to be experts. They say the bureaucrats should be. So I don't think that's a good argument to me. I don't want unelected bureaucrats taking a law and interpreting it the way they want to, and them being in office way past when these politicians mm-hmm. are in office. Mm-hmm. They've accrued way too much power, and this is a good decision by the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm.
What Congress needs to do is write better laws, write more direct laws, and that's exactly what the judicial branch is there for. It is to check the Congress and the executive branch when they get out of place, and that's exactly what had been happening with the Chevron doctrine. Fantastic decision indeed. So look at that. We got lots to talk to.
Yeah, we do.
And we are almost complete with our first segment. As we mentioned, we got Shane Scholer coming up next. He is Greene County Clerk, candidate for Secretary of State. Once again, folks, thanks so much for showing out in mass at Johnny's Hideout. When we say it was wall-to-wall standing room only, we mean it, because people had to go outside. Mm-hmm. Johnny's has two huge patios. They got the Boulevard patio on the front, and they got the Sunset patio on the back. Chris, it was so crowded inside. A lot of folks went to those other patios, and those were packed as well. It was wall to wall, and people were watching the debate. It was great. It was fun. And we're going to have more awesome events for all of you in News Talk STL Nation.
And I forgot, because I went out to the car to put something up, and I forgot that there were TVs that were kind of outside. And I was like, man, this is the place to be. It's a little cooler out here with all the people inside, Johnny's. Yes. It was a little warm in there last night, but we had a lot of fun.
Yes, we did. Shout out to Rick Pogue and Jake Kestner, the owners of Johnny's. Shout out to Johnny Douse, who is the proprietor and manager, general manager at Johnny's. All of the Johnny's girls, all the wait staff, everybody was fantastic, and we really appreciate you, and we're happy to help promote you as well. All right, 4:22 in the p.m., right on schedule. We're going to take a quick break here, and we're going to be right back. We're going to talk to Shane Scholer. He's one of the eight candidates for Secretary of State. How do you define yourself in an eight-way down-ticket race? Shane's going to tell us that and what we need to know about as the election season's about to swing into full effect here. We got an August 6th primary right around the corner and more. 101.9, 94.1, the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show at News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
We have some new details on the stolen digital key from the Maricopa County Tabulation and Election Center. Investigators found the key in the home of a temporary election worker. What charges does the suspect face?
So he's being charged with theft and criminal damage and is currently behind bars, all while the county continues its investigation into a matter that has some folks worried about election integrity.
Election officials say the digital key is used to turn on their tabulation machine.
Okay. In and of itself, it does not allow votes to be changed.
Taking the one key out of the building, posing security risk, and costing the county more than $20,000.
4:29 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, and as we all know, election security is going to be a huge issue in this year's elections. We have just the person in the studio with us to talk about that. He is Shane Scholer. He's the Greene County Clerk and a candidate for Secretary of State. Welcome, Ben, to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Chris. Great to be here.
And also have to mention our mutual friend, former Representative Joe Smith, says hello. And I think he's supporting you for
he's a good guy.
Secretary of State.
Absolutely.
All right, you heard that clip there. Anything like that happen here in Missouri? Do we have machines like that?
Well, you always have to do everything in bipartisan teams. You know, we swear in our deputy clerks, they take an oath, uphold the Constitution, follow the state laws. And so, but even in Greene County, you know, we do everything. You have to sign in when you go into where we have our election equipment stored. Mm-hmm. We now have key card entry. We also have cameras that are running 24/7. Wow. We watch everything that we're doing. Even in our official office of the historic courthouse, you have to sign in before you can come in there.
Right.
So we have a number of security protocols that are there. And of course, again, you know, we now don't allow anyone that's not a member of the county clerk team even into where we have our election equipment. Unless they are supervised by one of our people in the office. And so we work diligently to make sure those types of things don't happen. But I'm telling you, you have to stay vigilant. You have to constantly be watching everything that you're doing. But it's really good to have the camera. So if anything does happen, you can go back and review that and make sure those people are held accountable for what they're doing. But that's the other thing is, you're also testing the equipment, you know, before the election, after the equipment. We're doing hand count audits as well. So you have to have a number of things in place to make sure you're protecting yourself, because, you know, there's always potential there's going to be someone who's going to try to do something nefarious. Mm-hmm. And that's why you have to have protocols in place. You have to have safeguards in place. You have to have checks and balances in place. All those things have to be there in order to safeguard your elections. Because the first and foremost thing, I said this last night at our debate forum with the Republican in Greene County, you know, I don't want a Republican with a Republican, and I don't want Democrat with a Democrat, because Republicans have cheated before, too.
All right.
And so that's why you have to make sure that you have that bipartisanship, you have that integrity there, so that then when there are questions asked, you have a much better opportunity to get to the bottom of the matter. And that's one of the things back after 2020, I really did a lot of steps to look at our chain of custody, because we'd never had that many ballots mailed into us. Mm-hmm. And so in 2016, we had 3,000 ballots mailed back. We had about 7,000 vote in person. In 2020, we had about half and half, about 15,000 mailed in, and a little over 15,000 voted in person. We went and looked at all of our chain of custody documentation, because I tell people, every time that ballot moves, I want documentation that's following that. And the same way with our machines and our election equipment, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Shane, great to see you here in studio. Yes. Great to have you back here in St. Louis. Fun fact for everyone, if you're playing debate night trivia at home like we did last night, Shane and I and Congressman Jason Smith were roommates in Jefferson City back in the day. Boy, could we tell stories for the next hour.
Yes, we could. But maybe Jason would return our phone calls if we did.
There you go. Yeah, that's right. I know we're all trying to get a hold of him these days.
Exactly.
You know? Yes. He's trying to run the country, I guess, or something. You know, we all turned out all right.
That's
Shane,
good.
I want to follow up on that point, because for you know, Democrats especially, look, everybody's always trying to gain an edge, but Democrats want to pretend that there's no such thing as election fraud. Meanwhile, there were four officials recently caught on camera and arrested and charged with election fraud in Connecticut, you know, and so these things do happen. And even though the debate last night was good for our party, you are a Republican running as a Republican, we have to remain vigilant, like you said, right? What has Missouri done in the last 4 years to ensure the integrity of our elections? And what would you like to do if elected Secretary of State to improve on
that? Absolutely. Well, in 2022, I was president of the County Clerk Association. That's when the election integrity bill was written. I was part of that. Number one, we were proactive. We said drop boxes are not coming to our state, as we saw in other states like Georgia, especially people think of. We also made sure that when it came to when the ballot is mailed back to us, there's no opportunity to be able to go in and change anything on that ballot. So once there's no curing of the ballot, so that was made a state law during that time. No ballot curing. That was good, because it set a standard, because there wasn't a standard before that statewide. That was excellent. Also said that, you know, it put an onus on the state government and, frankly, local government. You're going to fund elections. So, you know, for example, there was a lot of private money poured into elections back in 2020. And frankly, the state zeroed out the funding for elections that year. And so when I testified, I said, people won't accept private money if you step up and fund your part. And so that was critical. We got that in there to make sure that the state is doing its fair share when it comes to paying for elections, too. So that was critical. We also, in that bill, said that, believe it or not, when you voted absentee, it was not actually declared a polling place. And so we were able to declare that as a polling place to make sure the standards of no, you know, electioneering can happen even during absentee voting. So that was critical. And of course, we made the paper ballot the official ballot.
That's right.
And that was critical. We were always for that. We were in the House.
Yes.
And then we said, I do always tell the folks this, you know, I passed photo ID, it was in the House. And then finally, we got to vote on it in 2016. And we thought it was solved, and then suddenly our friends in the legislature passed a bill that continued to allow you to show paper forms of documentation. I don't think that's what we voted on when we voted on that in 2016. So finally in 2022, that ship got righted. All those paper forms of documentation are so easily counterfeited, they got swept out. Now it's a photo ID. If you don't show up the photo ID, you have to vote a provisional ballot, and we'll check to make sure your signature matches before that ballot's counted. So a lot of good safeguards happen, but one thing that didn't happen, and I talk about this constantly, and I was glad to see members of the legislature file it this year, and frankly, some of the people that are in this race filed it, but I brought it to the forefront, and that is when absentee ballot mail is returned, it is a best practice to check that signature, but it's not the state law.
Interesting. Mm.
And I tell folks, if someone is choosing not to check that signature, because we've seen what happened down in St. Louis City back in 2016, there were some shenanigans with mail, with ballots being picked up and et cetera, brought into the election office there in St. Louis City, you have nothing in law to hold them accountable with. And so we need that in law. If someone is trying to throw an election for whatever reason, either it's a person or two people, we now have the teeth of the law to say you're going to be held accountable, and that's critical.
Mm-hmm. Speaking with Shane Scholer, Greene County Clerk and candidate for Secretary of State, he is also a former Speaker pro tem in the Missouri Legislature. Okay, now it's time for the biographical questions. Who is Shane Scholer? Tell us about your experience, and why are you the best person for this job?
Well, I'm ready day one to be your Secretary of State. I've been serving as a county clerk in Greene County for 10 years now, so I have experience when it comes to municipal elections. Actually, my very first election, we had someone who voted twice. We took that evidence to our sheriff. Mm-hmm. The sheriff did the investigation against separation of powers of government. Mm-hmm. Our prosecutor then took that evidence, and they made sure that offender was held accountable. So I understand what it is to catch someone in the act of voter fraud to make sure that they're held accountable. And then also, the county clerk does a number of different duties. You just don't do elections. Of course, you do voter registration. We do tax administration. We do payroll administration. We, like today, all the employees at Greene County, this was the day to get their paycheck. And guess what? If they don't get their paycheck, we hear about it pretty quickly, as you could imagine. So we do that. We oversee record retention archives, which is a duty of the Secretary of State's office. We oversee licensing notaries. And I like to joke, I'm a teetotaling Baptist with my name on every liquor establishment in Greene County.
That's right.
So I understand what it is to have a diversity of duties like the Secretary of State, because, not just doesn't oversee elections and voter registration. It oversees record retention archives, oversees business licensing. Mm-hmm. It also oversees the publishing of the rules, has a state library, also has a Wolfman Library for the Blind. It also has a security division, which protects our investments. And so number of duties there. And so this is, I think I am ready day one to be there. I don't have to take a year or two to learn what the role is of local election authorities. I can literally come in day one and be able to help them, because a lot of people know this. After 2020, we probably have a third brand new election officials across the state.
Mm.
And so it's important that they have people come alongside them and help them and be able to empower them and give them the resources and information they need to be able to do their job and do it well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Shane Scholer running for Secretary of State. Shane, I attend quite a few, and Chris does as well, electoral integrity conferences, national ones throughout the year. And so we're not as steeped in this knowledge as you are, but I've become a bit terrified as how much the left is working behind the scenes with billions of dollars flowing into all hundreds of different C3s and C4s that sound really nice on the surface. Maybe it's not as much of a problem here in blood red Missouri, but I feel like they're always trying to target red states to cause chaos and disruption. Mm-hmm. We just had an expert on talking about Arabella Advisors, for instance, and others. So we do have to remain vigilant on this, right?
Absolutely. No, I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, if there's a lesson the right could take, is that the left does not stop.
Mm-hmm.
They're constantly looking for new ways, new opportunities to be able to engage the people that they're trying to get involved in the process. And that's one of the reasons I love Turning Point USA, frankly.
Okay.
Because they are doing what I think the left does, and that is they're on the college campuses, they're in the churches, they're in so many different forums saying, we've got to get engaged. For too long, we've sat silent and let the left do this. And frankly, we have the most persuasive arguments when it comes to what we believe as conservatives, as Republicans, as constitutionalists, all those things. But we've stopped fighting the fight. And I think that's what, if there's anything, we may not like it, but the difference is we're going to do with integrity.
Gotcha. Mm.
And that's critical. And so, when you look at what the left has done, if there's anything that lacks integrity, that needs to be pointed out, needs to be highlighted so people understand that. Of course, you guys know this. Our friends in the media always don't help us do that, right?
Right.
Other than forums like this where it is highlighted. And so we just got to make sure that all those things are brought together. And that's part of what, I'm a believer in transparency. In 2022, I was named a Sunshine Hero here in our state for being transparent and open about what we do in Greene County, being open to the public. I put on a Sunshine Law School for not just Greene County, but we literally did it for the fire protection districts, the cities. We even had the highway patrol come to it because it is important people have access to their government and be aware of what's taking place and they have that information. The only time I ever was challenged was I was asked for the cast vote record a couple of years ago. And in that, we knew we would compromise the secrecy of the ballot. So we had to go to a court to get a ruling before we could release that cast vote record. Dave Rowland, you probably both know him.
Yes.
He worked for the defendant, and unfortunately we did have to, quote, take the person to court. I called the person and said, you've done nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got a statute that says transparency. I got a statute that says protect the secrets of the ballot. We need someone to decide this. And so we went to our local circuit court and we got that decided, and we've now released that cast vote record. So that's the only time I've ever actually been challenged with that. But I did what the law said, mm-hmm. because how many times do we get frustrated people in elected office that are making decisions without the authority of the Constitution or the statute behind them? Mm-hmm. And that's part of what as Republicans I believe in, is that we believe in the rule of law. And if the rule of law is not there, then we need to make sure that we get that direction before we take action.
Gotcha.
Shane, one of your opponents has become very controversial and has become kind of a internet star. And one of her main lines on her stump speech is that every one of her competitors are crooks. Shane, are you a crook?
Well, I've never been convicted of anything. Maybe a speeding ticket or two in my life. So I don't know where that puts me. So anyway, but, you know, it's interesting. I always tell people when I run for office, I learn more about myself before I ran for office than when I was actually running for office.
Right.
People will make up things even if they're not true.
Holy Toledo. And
Tim knows that better than anybody.
You know? Say.
I'm like, one time I ran, first time I ran, it said hometown unknown. I was like, oh no. I was kind of frightened by that, you know? So, listen. People are going to say things, and certainly, you know, this particular candidate has a lot of energy. They're coming at it with a different tact than some other candidates. Mm-hmm. But certainly, you know, I respect this individual in terms of the right to be able to go out and campaign. Not the way I campaign. Right. Don't plan to campaign that way. But I certainly respect that that person's in this race and wish them well. I just hope at the end of the day I'm the one that wins.
There you go. Shane, how do you differentiate yourself in an 8-way primary? It's down ticket from, we've got a U.S. senatorial race. We've got a big kahuna governor's race, attorney general's race. You got 8 people in here. I know all of you to some respect. I know many of you better than others. A lot of us, like Chris and I, have multiple friends in your mm-hmm. race.
Yes.
So how do you differentiate yourself and try to convince the voters that you're the best person for the job?
Well, I liken it to when you go to vote for sheriff, you want a sheriff that has law enforcement experience. Mm-hmm. That's critical to them being able to do their job and do it well. And I say, I'm the only candidate running who actually has experience administering elections, running elections, overseeing elections, voter registration, record retention archives. And so that difference, I think, is critical to the duty of Secretary of State, because it literally takes, and I can tell you this as a county clerk, the first couple of years, you're learning every day. It's like by a fire hose, mm-hmm. just learning. Mm-hmm. Even now, in my 10th year, I still learn every day. There's nuances, things I learn to get better. Why not have that knowledge day one and be ready versus having to come in and figure out what's taking place? And that's no disrespecting Secretary of State that doesn't have that experience, but I actually come with that knowledge and I want to use it to serve the people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my theme when I first ran was working to serve you. And, you know, we've gotten too top down in our leadership, in my opinion. You know, the answers don't happen in Washington, D.C. The answers don't come from Jefferson City. The answers come from the people we serve. That's our best place to be able to link together. And, you know, even when we talk about our local libraries, like, I don't like what I see happen in local libraries. Mm-hmm. And I know we've had some controversy up in St. Charles. Mm-hmm. But I tell people, most of the funding for the library comes from your local property tax dollars.
Let's
empower the people to go to their commissioners and go to the city council and say, I want to be on that library board. It's important that we have their voice to hold them accountable. And yes, Secretary of State should say, we're not going to fund any library that is misusing those funds for these, you know, agendas that they're promoting that we're fully aware of. At the end of the day, that's how we do better, is when we engage with people locally. And that's what you learn in elections, is I can only be in one place at one time. If I want to have election integrity, it's going to take all of us coming together, because that's what our statutes call for. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I think, the difference I bring, is not only the understanding of the process, but the seeing to understand how to do it and do it well.
Gotcha. Shane, you and I will be at the Jefferson County Lincoln Days dinner tonight.
Yes.
Where else will you be in the area, and where are some other stops are you making around the state? And give folks the website if they want to get more information
Absolutely.
About your campaign.
Well, tomorrow's going to be some early 4th of July activities I'm going to be doing down southwest Missouri. And so you can't forget your home, hometown area that you're at,
exactly.
Because I do know where our hometown is, actually. So So that's good. And then on the 4th, I'll be back up here. I'll be in the O'Fallon 4th of July parade.
So that's a big one. That parade many
absolutely.
Times.
Absolutely. Last year we did Marshfield, but we got teams of people going everywhere. And so, and then I'm going to be in Kansas City on Monday night, meeting with a group up there. Okay. And so, as you know, there's no rest for the weary on this. And so putting a lot of time on the road. Last weekend I was up, started the Friday night in Douglas County. Mm-hmm. Went up Saturday to Gentry County, mm-hmm. and then over, spent the night in Columbia, went to church with a friend there, and went mm-hmm. up to Pike County,
okay.
and then came back. So it's just
wow.
everywhere.
Wow. Yeah. Intense.
Absolutely. Yeah. But it's fun. It's
website.
What we're supposed to do. ShaneForSOS.com, social media at Shane Scholler.
And he's also on Instagram at Shane Scholler and Facebook. Shane, thank you so much to come in. We've been trying to kind of been slacking not having you on, but I'm glad we finally got you on. I will see you tonight, and best of luck in your campaign.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris's Corner, when we come back, we'll talk about the disastrous debate performance by Joe Biden last night and how the Democrats are panicking. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL, number one for live and local conservative talk.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
We'd be able to wipe out his debt. We'd be able to help make sure that all those things we need to do, child care, elder care, making sure that we continue to strengthen our health care system, making sure that we're able to make every single solitary person eligible for what I've been able to do with the dealing with everything we have to do with, look, if we finally beat Medicare.
Thank you, President Biden. President Trump?
He's right. He did beat Medicare. He beat it to death, and he's destroying Medicare.
4:51 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, and one of the great lines that President Trump got off last night, one of the things he did very well is that he did not try to interrupt Joe Biden. He bided his time and waited his turn. If you look at the debate last night and you saw the close-up shots of President Trump, you could tell he wanted to respond so badly and that he was getting emotionally affected by some of the lies that Joe Biden was saying, but he was disciplined tonight. Last night, I loved seeing that, and the president did what he should have did 4 years ago and let Joe Biden talk and let him hang himself. Chris's Corner, let's talk about what the Democrats think about Joe Biden's performance. Mm-hmm.
Chris. And if you don't know, now you know.
And now, Chris's Corner.
You know, as you guys know, for my show prep, I read a lot of political insider type publications. One of them, of course, is Politico. And I talked a little bit about this earlier in the show of when that gaffe that we just played there went. The people were contacting Politico with these comments. One said, "I picked the wrong day to stop sniffing glue." That was a Democratic House member. A former senior Obama official wrote, "I'm on a lot of chains of people gaming out how Biden withdraws. Need open convention. He has to go. Who are the grandees who could tell Biden to go? Obama, Clinton, Gore, Pelosi?" And then a Clinton alumni sent a train wreck gif. And then some other folks were making another short list for possible president. I think there are short lists being made. Gretchen Whitmer, Andy Beshear, Roy Cooper, and Gavin Newsom. That was a Democratic operative. You know, you look at some of the left-wing publications, CNN had a flash poll, said majority of debate watchers say Trump won debate over mm-hmm. Biden. You see the Washington Post headline today, Democrats panic over Biden's debate performance, doubt his future. You have another New York Times headline today, it's frightening. Democratic voters worry by Biden's struggles in debate. And then finally, this is a political article. WTF, panic Dems start looking for alternatives to Biden. Three strategists close to three potential Democratic presidential candidates said they were bombarded with text messages. I think the most telling comment was from a Substack from Danny Pfeiffer. He is a former White House communications director. I read his Substack, and he's pretty good at spin. Whatever
Biden was doing. He would spin it somehow and make Donald Trump look terrible. He didn't even try to spin today's Substack. He said, "I am rattled by what I just witnessed. This is a hugely consequential moment. Within hours of the debate ending, report surfaced that some of the party are hoping Biden will drop out. I have no idea if that anything will happen. This is a very fluid situation. The next 48 hours will be critical." Danny Pfeiffer went on to say, "Not sure what else to say. Joe Biden was bad. The president wanted this debate on his timeline. It was a high-risk move. Given the dynamics of the race, I thought it was the right risk to take, but Biden didn't deliver. He looked and sounded old. He mixed up his words and misstated his own policies. The split screen was very hard for Biden, who often seemed like he was staring off into space as opposed to looking at the camera. President Biden could not clearly defend his record or prosecute the very obvious case against Trump." When you've lost all of these publications, when you've lost former Democrats, I even heard today on Facebook that even The View had not positive things about Biden's performance yesterday. Tim, I think we are witnessing history here unfolding for our eyes. I think we're going to see a sitting president be removed, as not as president, of course, but as the nominee for his party. And I also think that we may have seen last night a new debate format. Next time we have presidential debates in 4 years, I think they're going to try to make this the norm for debates. No studio audience. Mics are cut off in between responses. This debate went real well last night, so I think this may be what we are seeing. Maybe debates that we see from now on. But Joe Biden, he's in bad shape, and now people are going to be speculating who is going to replace Joe Biden. Conventions are weeks away. And that is Chris's Corner.
I mean, they're just losing their minds. They don't know what to do about it. And it's just they're in a conundrum of their own making, yeah. Right? Because we saw this coming 1,000 miles away. Nobody wanted to admit it. And now here we are at the 11th hour. And you've got different factions over at DNC HQ and in the media completely panicked.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and to give the Democrats some benefit of the doubt or some cover, I don't think they expected, they knew that Joe Biden was deteriorating, but I don't think they expected him to go down as quickly as he has in the last 6 or 7 months. You know, he was halfway, could look like he was doing the job the first couple of years, but it just seems like lately, the last 6, 7, 8 months, that he is really, really deteriorated. And I think that kind of caught the Democratic strategists off guard. They weren't expecting, they thought they could at least get him through November.
Well, I think we all did, but whatever coked up cocktail they've been giving him, Chris, they either mixed it wrong last night or it's not having an effect anymore.
I hear you.
I've never heard so much foolishness.
Speaker Stump speech at 5:07.
We're going to continue this these talking points, Chris. The left-wing lunosphere losing their minds about this.
And then we'll talk at 5:24 with Patrick Tuohy, senior fellow at the Show Me Institute. We'll talk about the state audit probe on the spending that failed to push, the failed spending push to keep the Rams in St. Louis. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.